Hi, I'm Jane McCallion.
And I'm Adam Shepherd.
And you're listening to the IT Pro Podcast. We're often told that programming has become a key skill for everyone to learn. Knowing how to code is almost on par with being able to read and write or do maths, to the point that it's even been added to the national curriculum. With the number of jobs unfilled in the tech sector, it's easy to see why this wisdom prevails.
But coding isn't just one monolithic thing. There are multiple languages that are useful for different things, and what you choose to learn will influence the direction of your career. Should you start with one of the more easy-to-learn languages, for example, or is it worth the blood, sweat and tears of learning something more niche?
Joining us to talk about all this is Jess Craig, Associate Solutions Engineer at Twilio. Jess, welcome.
Thanks very much, Jane. Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
So, could you tell us a little bit about your background? Because you didn't start off as a programmer, did you?
Correct, yes. I am one of the many in the tech industry at the moment who hasn't come from a non-traditional background and definitely does not possess a computer science degree. I definitely recommend if anyone has an interest in tech, I think studying up a little bit on computer science is definitely a fun endeavour, depending on your definition of the word fun, of course. I've come from a self-taught background. So I think like a lot of people, I was first introduced to code around the age of MySpace. Exactly, warm memories. Cut my teeth on kind of playing around with HTML templates and that sort of thing. And I think just generally through kind of my previous career as a kind of working in sort of press and content, I started to become more aware of different roles in technology and started to kind of pursue a couple of self-guided courses at home.
So would you say then the reason that you moved from sort of, I guess, a media background to more of a technical career, was it led by... Like I said, you know, there is this kind of, you know, the tech skills gap observing that, or was it more, I guess, that, you realised that you had this interest and decided to pursue a bit of a passion?
I think it was definitely a combination of those two. The passion for technology was definitely there and is still there. Not using past tense of that. I just caught myself there. But I think there was something about tech. I went along to a couple of meetups put on by this organisation called Code Bar, which I just hugely recommend to anyone who's looking to get into tech. They're still doing a lot of virtual workshops and remote-friendly events, so definitely check them out. But I think by going along to kind of a couple of Code Bars meetups, I not only sort of realised how accessible a career in technology was, and also just kind of remembered how enjoyable I found solving problems. Because essentially, the kind of the job of a developer in one way is kind of just a continuous puzzle solver. But I think I also kind of had this feeling that I'd met my people, and I know that sounds strange, but just the culture felt right. It just felt like I'd found something that I was looking for in a lot of other industries and careers, and it just was sitting there.
So let's talk a little bit more about how you made that switch, because you know, coming from a background with no kind of professional or formal coding education, what was your kind of first step towards teaching yourself programming on a kind of practical level? What languages did you decide to start off with?
So I think like a lot of people, I started out, I was fixated on that how question for a long time. I think there was no kind of, there's no sort of one size fits all answer really to that. You've just got to kind of try and just you know, there is no try, you've just got to do, to kind of inelegantly quote Yoda. But I started off with Code Academy's kind of beginner HTML and CSS courses. But then quite quickly, I think after figuring out how much I hated CSS, you kind of get driven towards, you get driven towards this path of JavaScript, which I massively, hugely recommend to anyone who's trying to get into coding, because JavaScript is one of the few languages that you need very little in terms of your own local environment to kind of get it going, you can open up a browser in Chrome, go to Inspect Element, click on the console, and there you can kind of start typing some little JavaScript commands and just log some things to the console and get going. So yeah, I think JavaScript is definitely the sort of like lowest barrier to entry kind of, well, one of them. I think Python's a really good one as well, because Python is, you know, I've heard you talk a lot about Python on this show in terms of its relation to machine learning and those kind of worlds. But Python is just so, it's really lends itself to kind of mathematical brains, because it's very legible, it's very easy to easy to read. I mean, we're lucky it's in English for the most part, so that's great. Yeah, Python is very much sort of like, as long as you've kind of got the BODMAS, you know, you know your order of brackets and multiplication and division, then you should be able to get on with Python and build a simple database accessing website.
And the fact that Python's been around for as long as it has means that there's tons and tons of resources for, you know, people that are just getting started out, or even people that want to take an existing familiarity with Python and scale it up to start working with things like data science or machine learning or more advanced applications. There's a huge amount of resources out there. But I want to just briefly revisit JavaScript. Obviously, it's the first language a lot of people start with for all of the reasons that you've mentioned. It's, you know, very easy to pick up and play, as it were. You know, there's a lot of there's an immediacy to JavaScript. I feel like you can get up and running and actually start seeing some tangible changes. You can actually start doing very tangible things with JavaScript very quickly, which gives you a real sense of achievement and progress if you're just starting learning something. But I want to talk about some of the applications of JavaScript, the extensibility. So as a JavaScript developer, what were the first things that you built, if you like, in terms of, you know, projects and things like that?
I think everyone, I believe it's almost like a soft requirement to be a developer that you need to make a to-do list app within your first month. Everyone hates them and no one uses them after they make them, but everyone makes them. But it's such a, it is an important exercise, I guess, because it helps you, in order to make a JavaScript-based kind of to-do list app, you've got to write Node. So the kind of back-end equivalent, I guess, of JavaScript. You've got to stand up a server, because you're essentially like you're hosting tasks, you're kind of doing those kind of CRUD mechanisms, those kind of core server mechanisms. So you're kind of either creating an item, reading an item, updating an item, or deleting an item. So it kind of teaches you those kind of principles of like working with servers and APIs. And then on top of that, you get to do a bit of styling and a bit of animation and mechanics, because your app is doing something. There's a bit of obvious user interaction. Then you get to kind of look at how you kind of implement the, you know, use JavaScript as a bit of
a front end engine, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, a bit more of a front end engine. It's kind of like a lot of people kind of talk about building a house, and if HTML and CSS are kind of the you know, the brickwork, the foundations, and the kind of the cosmetics of the house, JavaScript is the plumbing, making everything work. So
we love a house analogy on this podcast.
Well, we love a house analogy on this
podcast.
I'm
so sorry. I'm definitely the 15th person to bring that up on the article.
Well, the other 14 are Jane, so you're fine.
So, I mean, I guess what I'm taking from this as well is that, you know, JavaScript as a beginning point is quite, you know, good. And when you speak about the to-do list, it's easy to use it to create digital versions of stuff that you just, everybody knows what a to-do list is, whether you call it a to-do list or, I don't know, something else.
Or like a planner.
Productivity
or
engine. Or
yes. We've all seen one. We've all written one, you know, either by hand or used another app. So that kind of practical but simple idea seems like, you know, whether it's JavaScript or anything else, seems like quite a good place to start, rather than this ethereal idea of learning a new language effectively.
Oh, completely. I don't know whether or not I'm jumping off too soon off the back of what you've just said, but a friend of mine recently decided to kind of enter the tech world. And we were kind of talking about what makes a good portfolio and what makes a good project to kind of host in your portfolio. And the reason why I think people kind of gravitate back to to-do lists again and again is because it's kind of solving an obvious business problem using technology and incorporating some kind of thought around user experience. It's kind of those three things that you really need to capture in any project that you put on your portfolio are right there.
But I think the to-do list app is a great example of a perfect starter project, because it is kind of, as you mentioned, it is all of the various bits rolled into one, but in a very easily manageable and easy to get your head around way. You know, I think a lot of people think of, you know, learning to code and thinking, oh, I've got to come up with an idea for an app, and it has to be, you know, really innovative and really in depth, and it's got to include all of these features, and that can make it incredibly daunting to actually get started, because you've got this whole hill to climb before you've written your first kind of line of code.
No, it's, I think that kind of whole problem of where do I even start is emblematic of entering the tech industry. I think it's, one of the reasons why I think JavaScript is also such a good language to start with and potentially stick with throughout your career is that it's particularly relevant at the moment. It's been relevant for the kind of past 5 years. I mean,
I would say so. Really, yeah. ever since the explosion in web apps, I think, is when JavaScript really started to take hold in the kind of major way that it did.
And for all their foibles, I think Facebook's kind of standing behind React has kind of helped a lot more companies create web apps that work on mobile. You don't, it's kind of taken away that sort of way that like mobile development used to be siloed. So I think kind of the advent of like React and TypeScript in particular is just, I think it's just kind of kept JavaScript at the kind of forefront of web development. In my eyes, I think JavaScript's the cool language. I mean,
yeah, very much so. It's very much the kind of default go-to for, I think, most new developers. But I think something that's really interesting is the amount or the increase in portability between programming languages. We've had a lot of developments in recent years, a lot of them from Microsoft, oddly enough, in making applications and frameworks much more cross-compatible, which I think has been really helpful for extending that flexibility across a range of different kind of platform surfaces and application frameworks.
We're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we'll be talking about some of the other languages on offer, including some of the oldest.
See you after the break. Welcome back. Now, Jess, we've spoken a bit about some of the more common languages, particularly JavaScript. Some of the more esoteric languages, though, have been around for a long, long time. We've spoken previously on the show about languages like COBOL, which is still in surprisingly widespread use in enterprise IT, particularly in the arena of mainframes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's worth new developers putting the time in to learn some of these less widespread languages in comparison to some of the more popular ones?
I definitely think it's worth new developers taking a closer look and potentially building one or two projects in a language that they're less familiar with, that has these kind of tendencies of legacy languages like COBOL. So for example, I've been learning a lot of C recently. It's been really useful for just kind of a computer science kind of foundation course that I've been doing in the background. And it's great because as programming languages themselves have evolved over the past couple of decades, we've kind of we've dressed them up more and more to kind of disguise the things that they do in the background, like compiling. And for instance, with Python, you never need to stop and compile Python. That's why it's one of the reasons why it's so great if you're a beginner, because you don't really need to kind of stop and make several versions of your code to be able to launch your executable program. But No, I think kind of taking a step back into look at the more like legacy languages is really beneficial, because it just reminds you of how consequential each design decision you make is. Like every single step that you program into your software, it will take a certain amount of computing power, and that will be replicated, and that will be reflected in the time it takes to load your program. And no user has users have waning patience as it is when it comes to kind of loading up software programs. So I think it's just really important to kind of remind yourself of some of the tech principles, I guess, we've kind of come to take for granted in the advent of tech.
Yeah, I guess some of the, you know, one of the benefits, it sounds like, of Python in particular is that it is similar to natural language rather than maths or algebra. I mean, you say that you've been learning C, and obviously you have a background in JavaScript and Python. What other languages, if any, have you picked up, or are you thinking of picking up as you go along?
So I worked with Ruby for a while. Really, really love Ruby. I think Ruby on Rails has got like quite a good presence in the tech sector. I think more and more companies have been picking up Ruby within their tech stack over the past couple of years. So it's now got a legitimate business use, which was a burn that I think many people had on Ruby programmers for a long time.
So what would you say Ruby's most useful for in a kind of modern setting? Because I think Ruby is one of the one of those languages that the, let's say, average non-developer tech person probably isn't that familiar with. Like most people within tech certainly are kind of familiar with JavaScript and what it does, and you know, probably have a passing familiarity with Python. They've probably played around with a bit of BASIC in their youth, a bit of HTML, but Ruby, I feel like, is a bit more obscure in terms of its applications.
It is. It's kind of, I mean, it's really similar to Python in its both its use cases and its kind of physical representation or digital representation, if we're going to talk about it like accurately. It's kind of, I think, because so often people use Ruby on Rails, and Rails is a framework with which you kind of, you know, support your Ruby apps on in the same way that you would potentially like make a Flask application using Python. You would create a Ruby application using Rails, and Rails quickly generates like a really like a robust kind of like web framework. So when you kind of like invoke a Rails app, you have your kind of model controller view. You've got all of your principles there for your web app. So it's really, it's quite a nice way of kind of potentially bootstrapping an idea and standing something up quite quickly.
So you've mentioned a couple of new languages that you're kind of starting to pick up and starting to work on. The question of upskilling and kind of ongoing learning is one that comes up quite a lot in the context of enterprise software development in particular. How important would you say it is for companies to support that kind of activity for their developers?
Oh my gosh, it's completely vital. I think the day that your developers fall out of love with tech and with what they do, that extends completely to your application and to your business. I think it's vital, especially now. We're so divided, and I think all of our connections have been put through this digital filter now. Our work has become a bit more of a central pillar, I think, to our lives than we'd often like, if we are lucky enough to kind of still be in employment. I think it's crucial for companies to enable their workforce to kind of keep undergoing professional development, even if that's in, I think it's even more effective if that's through means of like pair programming with people that you otherwise wouldn't usually pair up with. Like I've recently paired with a principal solutions architect, and that taught me so much in terms of working principles and just kind of communicating expectations. Sometimes I think you take a lot for granted. I think when you're kind of working by yourself, you can get used to your own thought patterns, your own processes, and things can kind of quickly become stale.
I'd imagine it's easy to get into bad habits that way as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, because you're the kind of creative process, isn't it? You're so forgiving of your own foibles.
So yeah, it does sound, both from what you've just said and also from you mentioning CodeBar earlier on, that this sort of peer-to-peer learning or mentoring is important, you know, just generally when it comes to both when you start off learning to code and building your skills throughout your professional career.
Yes, no, it definitely is. It's so important because I think people can sometimes look at learning to code as a very isolated skill, as learning a list of commands and knowing when to invoke them. But the best programmers that I've ever met usually have this second instinct when it comes to systems design and choosing good design processes. You've probably heard the saying write dry code before, and how that means DRY stands for, you know, don't repeat yourself. So write code that does not repeat itself. And it's, when you say that out loud, it can sound like a really simple phrase, it can sound like a really simple command, but there are a multitude of ways I think we kind of we instinctively pick up patterns as human beings, and we mimic those patterns in ways that we are often not very conscious of, and the best systems designers and developers are very aware of their own patterns, but are also quite tuned into other people's patterns. And the only way to do that, I think, is to keep yourself exposed to different environments and join in hackathons and stretch yourself to that little bit beyond where you're used to. So that's why I think that's one of the reasons why I think JavaScript's such a just a brilliant language to get involved in, because you can kind of have that comfort of coding things that make sense to you and that build upon your knowledge, but you also have that room to really stretch yourself a little bit and launch a back-end application if you're used to being front-end, or vice versa.
So for new developers or people who are looking to become developers, what are the kind of top problems or top hurdles that you would warn them to look out for?
Oh my gosh. I think we're all quite familiar with learning plateaus. It happens. I think we get used to our own assumptions of a problem. I mean, learning plateaus can manifest themselves in a number of ways. But I think there will be times when you will get stuck and you will just need to speak to someone else. And there's nothing you can do about that apart from just speak to someone else. Sometimes I don't know whether or not this is a very good analogy to use, but it's almost like when you're in a video game and you pick up an important item and you know that this item has something to do with your overall mission, but you don't have the contextual kind of understanding to figure out where it fits into the kind of wider game itself. So sometimes you need to speak to someone else, and that's part of the process itself. I think people shouldn't be too hard on themselves if they don't know everything, because a lot of the time, I guess getting someone else's eyes on the problem is part of solving the problem itself. You can look at the same documentation over and over again, and without that added different perspective, you will be stuck at your same conclusion, same assumptions. I just would urge new developers to ask for help and get onto tech Twitter, engage with people that you don't know, and even, especially now that a lot of events aren't happening in person, a lot of tech community groups like CodeBar that I mentioned earlier have open Slack groups that you can register with and you can join. Just getting someone else's eyes in front of a problem sometimes does you the world of good. It just opens you up to that new perspective and helps you remember how many different ways there are to find a solution.
Absolutely. And I think that the developer community online is the most collaborative and the most helpful and the most supportive, certainly broadly speaking, one that I think I've ever come across. I mean, tools like Stack Overflow, for example.
Oh, yes.
I mean, if every piece of code that had been copied from Stack Overflow was erased overnight, the entire IT industry would collapse.
So true. I think I remember seeing a great XKCD style comic of someone sketching an accurate representation of their tech stack, and they sketched, they just labelled some Tech Overflow solution that I copied and pasted without reading properly and understanding. And I think if we're all honest, every developer is guilty of doing that once or twice. But
oh,
I think,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Does it work? Yes, fine, leave it alone. I don't need to understand how it works. I
exactly.
just know that it does.
If you don't understand how it works, does it even work? I mean, kind of, but yeah.
I've just prevented myself from making a car analogy.
Oh, thank you.
restraint, the amount of restraint going on for me in this podcast. It is a car analogy. How much do you need to know the internal workings of the workings of an internal combustion engine in order to pilot a car?
Exactly.
It's a car analogy.
Yeah, I see the holding it's back the car well.
So Jess, anybody who has been listening to this podcast and is inspired to learn to code, where would you suggest they start?
Well, one of the places that I've been kind of using, one of the programs that I've been using to kind of practice my coding skills a lot recently has been Twilio Quest. It's a really charming game that the company that I work for developed to teach people how to code and to use our various products. So definitely give that a download. You play as a hero trying to kind of navigate your way through space. So that's, you know, like a nice little added fun narrative. Exactly.
it
makes the days that sometimes if you don't really want to kind of, you know, figure out how to use Docker, you can kind of save the world with code. So that's a really great alternative to some places, some solutions out there. But, you know, I wouldn't overthink it. Free Code Camp is awesome. And a lot of really good developers have used their courses. They've got a killer YouTube channel as well with loads of tutorials. So Code Academy is also great. They've added a bunch of new tracks recently, so you can focus on a particular area of development. And these tracks kind of give you a little bit of a structure when it comes to upskilling for a particular discipline within web development. So that's pretty useful as well.
Well, unfortunately, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for this week. But thank you once again to Jess for joining us. It's been great having you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You can find links to everything we've discussed today in the show notes and even more on our website, www.itpro.co.uk.
You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn. Don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like the show, leave a rating and review to help other people find us.
We'll be back next week with more insight from the world of IT. But until then, goodbye.
Bye.
The IT Pro Podcast is brought to you by the Dennis Podcast Network.